Hey, so welcome. Thank you so much for joining me, Chief Vaden, here to just talk about a couple of things to our formation, but to whoever may listen in or watch these later. You know, there's times where as the command chief, they expect you to have all the information, and then you provide your thoughts and perspective. And what I've learned over time is our formation really desires to hear from who they can see themselves in. So we have represented before us, but we'll do introductions here in just a second, but represented the NCO tier, senior NCO tier, and the company grade officer or CGO tier. So thank you again for being here. And today's objective is to talk about just a few topics. There's a lot of topics we can talk about in the Air Force, but we'll talk about mission and personnel readiness, physical training standards, discipline and responsiveness, and then risk to force, risk to mission, like how we respond when we get a tasking or we get a request. So without further ado, if you don't mind, Sergeant Crabtree, we'll start with you and just a quick introduction, and we'll just go around and end with you, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Chief. I'm Technical Sergeant Lanham Crabtree from the 42nd Force Support Squadron. I'm an ALS instructor, been in the Air Force for 7.5 years, and appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
Thanks, Chief. I'm Technical Sergeant Fernandez. I work at the 42nd Logistics Readiness Squadron. I'm the Section Chief for the Installation Deployment Readiness Cell. I've been in the Air Force for 9 years and originally from Houston, Texas. So thanks for the opportunity once again as well.
Hello, Chief. My name is Master Sergeant Emmy Ramirez, and I work at the 42nd Air Base Wing, and I'm the 3F5 Base Functional for here Maxwell Gunter Annex. I'm originally from Denver, Colorado, and I have been in the military for about 15 years.
Chief, I'm honored to be given this opportunity. It's good to be here. Lieutenant John Putnam, 42nd Contracting Squadron. I work in the Defense Education Flight, so we service Air University and its 13 directorates, and we stay pretty busy this time of year at the end of the fiscal year. I've been at Maxwell for coming up on 2 years now, and we've certainly enjoyed our time.
Well, awesome. Thank you all so much again for being here and then providing a little bit of an introduction so the team watching knows who they're listening to. So, you know, in the Air Force, we talk a lot about executing the mission, right? I mean, that's our job. We're in the profession of arms, so we execute the mission, but it takes people to do that, right? So the first topic I would like to discuss, and I'll just throw out a couple of questions, and I would really just love it if you could just have a conversation, because I really do believe that's where our airmen benefit the most, just hearing people talk about a topic, right? And use examples that you feel are relevant. So when we talk about mission and personal or personnel readiness, I think of it as readiness is proactive. We can't be reactive. We can't hurry up and get ready once that call has come. So we got to spend, I believe, time in preparing to be ready. And then the Air Force has also talked a little bit about, you might've heard it, mission over function. We all in the Air Force come into the Air Force as airmen, and then you go off to technical training and you become something in a functional stovepipe, if you will, right? Or definitely functionally aligned. It's how we do our promotions, how we do a lot of different things. But the Air Force is asking us how to be a little bit more mission ready versus functionally ready. So just a couple of things that come to my mind is how do you as leaders at the echelons that you serve at, how do you actively monitor and improve your team's readiness? What kind of steps do you take to make sure that your team is ready for whatever the Air Force asks them to do, whether it be functional and or mission alliance?
I could go ahead and start if that's okay. So basically as a base functional, I'm in charge of providing the manning in both Maxwell and Gunter Annex, seeing different perspectives and different MASHCOMs at the end of the day. Little do people know that we have AETC, but also AFMC. Mm-hmm. And so I have to actually look at manning in those and then make sure that we have the proper people there and also accept technical training graduates. That way they could also have the opportunity to learn from other individuals and different jobs across the installation. So,
yeah, aside from our formal readiness reporting, I myself am a DERS reporter. I push our monthly report on behalf of the squadron. And I can physically see who's on a medical profile and what and why, but I think the answer is a little bit deeper into knowing your people and understanding their needs and really creating a culture of feedback. I think to understand what they need, you've got to be receptive and you've got to establish an environment to where they're comfortable coming to you, open up and talking about it. So for me, the first step is getting to know my people and establishing relationships and building that trust to fully understand what we need and where we stand from a readiness perspective.
Okay. Yeah, Chief, I want to touch on the mission over function piece. In my experience in my 7.5 years of being in the Air Force. I've been fortunate. I don't know if it's necessarily a benefit, but this is my third AFSC. So I feel like I'm kind of a master of no trades, like the jack of all trades, master of none. But I feel like it has been a benefit with the shift in mindset of mission over function, because I don't solely focus on being a dental assistant or being a command and control operations controller or even being an ALS instructor. I've used that in the classroom with my students, even teaching, like, hey, listen, the mission can change tomorrow. You could be tasked with something to go downrange, to go do a humanitarian. It doesn't matter what the mission is, but what is asked of us, it's just going back to being that big A, that big airman first, and then we can focus on skill level upgrade training, formal training, all of those things when we come back. But it's been a wild ride, focusing on the mission over function.
Yeah, so my job, my responsibility, right, is to kind of train and educate our unit deployment managers. So for the most part, I don't, and the shift within the mindset from the legacy, the previous legacy deployment system into AFRIGEN, right, there's been this, a lot of feedback on how we educate our airmen to have a warfighter mentality. And I hate to say it, but it's not a one size fits all solution. So it's kind of getting back to that culture of mission over readiness and understanding that yes, your AFSC does matter. However, when we tell you, or when there's a need to go to war and to fight, we have to be able to stand up and do what our nation asks us to do.
That's incredible. So thanks for that. And you know, readiness is really important, as we've all just discussed and described. And one of the, I think, critical, I really do believe critical aspects is our physical fitness, because I think fitness equals lethality and credibility. And so I'd like you to explore your thoughts on, you know, I do say look the part and be the part. It's important, I believe, and I'd like your perspectives on it as leaders. What is your PT philosophy and how do you model excellence? Because I think that leaders, we don't just meet the standard, we got to exceed the standard. So I'd like y'all to kick around that a little bit on your PT philosophy and how do you model excellence and kind of inspiring your airmen, your teams to follow that.
Chief, I have to make a shout out to the 42nd Contracting PTLs. We've seen an increase over the past quarter from 80% unit average to a 93. That's just substantial. And we've had to put implement a mindset of excellence to achieve that, because for a whole unit to average higher than the standard is exemplifying that idea. So it's taken a concerted effort from our PTLs. I asked them that question, what's your PTO? What's your philosophy? And they said to be able to max out push-ups, sit-ups, and a run. And we're going to cater our workout to be able to do that for everyone.
Thanks, LT, for sharing that. For me, when I think of my PT philosophy, it's an inherent individual responsibility. You know, when we're honored to wear our nation's cloth and we know what we're signing up for when it comes to serving our country, and PT is a pillar of that. And so for me and in my formations, I'm more than willing to let an airman go and work out for an hour, and like I'll hold the stick for whatever is necessary, so you can go and take care of yourself physically. Because if you don't have that physical readiness, it's going to seep into mental readiness, financial readiness, all of those different things. But you have to be able to take care of yourself physically, because I have to be able to rely on you downrange, and you want to be able to rely on me downrange. And so to me, that's of the utmost importance, not just your mental capacity and your ability to do your job, but just whatever the physical demands of the mission requires, we got to be able to meet that task.
I definitely drive a holistic approach of a well-balanced fitness, and that includes sleep, diet, and nutrition. As long as you're keeping those three balanced, it just feeds into your overall fitness. When you're feeding your fitness, I think it factors into everything else in life, like you touched on. So being able to lead from the front and just be an example for your airmen. In this case, as a young CGO, it's so important for me to be a spitting image of exceeding the standard. And I try to do that. I'm going on 2 years of 100 PFA, and I'm proud of it. It took concerted effort and work to get there, and I try to encourage my airmen to get there as well by just being the example.
That's very impressive. I actually would like to be able to keep up with you. So I know a lot of people, they're like, oh, age, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that. So being towards the end of my career, I kind of feel proud every time I could actually keep up with these brand new airmen when it comes to running or ruck marches. I like to be the example and actually be there doing these workouts with them and be able to keep up. So it's an honor.
Yeah, I definitely agree with all three of y'all, and I think we share somewhat the same philosophy in a bit. And it's just more than running a mile and a half, doing your max push-ups and sit-ups, right? It's how you're taking care of yourself physically, whether that's, like you said, sleep, your nutrition, or even just by going to the doctor, right, and understanding what limits and what bounds you have physically. Because if I can't trust you downrange to pick up your disabled air or your disabled wingman, right? Like, how can I trust that you're gonna actually get back home safely? So that all ties into physical training.
Yeah, that's imperative. And so I speak from experience, not only my own personal experience, but also I have two young sons that serve. So I will, Lucinda, you talked about it, about, you know, modeling excellence, and 100% our airmen are watching us. Now, there might be times where we can't get the 100 PFA. That's incredible. But when you're out, when you're present and you look like you're getting after it and you're showing and demonstrating you're getting after it, your airmen are going to respect that. So if you don't mind, if y'all could take, you know, 30 seconds or so a piece of rolling your final thoughts, if you will, into these two different topics we talked about, whether it's mission over function, readiness, PT, whatever it is that you want to highlight, and kind of a 30-second to the formation, what would it be that that you would say to them? And Sergeant Crabtree, we'll start with you and just work our way around.
To our airmen?
Yes.
To those across the formation?
Yeah.
My final thoughts would be Big A comes first. You're an airman first. I think that we're doing a better job from the United States Air Force perspective of teaching that and breeding that type of culture, especially from whenever I first joined to now, that whatever the mission dictates, we're going to take care of it because we're an airman first. Now, we're not going to sit there and scream out like the Marines do, like, I'm a Marine. You know, that's not a part of our culture, but whatever the mission dictates, let's take care of it. It may be outside of your scope of responsibility or even something of your knowledge, but just your willingness to get your hands into the fight, that's going to lead us to mission success down the road, because us collectively doing that together, we're going to succeed no matter what the challenge is ahead.
Yeah, so a little bit, I want to touch a little bit on mission command, right? And if you have read the doctrine itself, there's a story in there that talks about commander's intent, right? So understanding commander's intent is very important to mission risk and analysis. The story says, right, that during 9/11, when the terrorists attacked the Twin Towers, Lieutenant Colonel Webb at the time was directed to go help Americans. And that was his commander's intent. And I think that type of culture needs to be instilled back into our airmen, right? Understanding what commander's intent is, it might be big or small, but understanding that whatever the mission takes, we need to accomplish it.
I think the last message that I just want to pass along is that you got to take care of yourself in all aspects. And it is very important to go and take care of yourself also medically, as you mentioned. That way you could actually take care of your airmen in all aspects, because you could speak out of experience rather than, brain dumped.
To start up?
So just basically take care of your airmen. If you take care of yourself, you could actually pour into the airmen and take care of them. And at the end of the day, it'll be a working machine.
If there's anything I've learned in the past 3 years I've been in now, coming up on 3 years, it is to put others before myself. And I've learned that lesson before coming into the service, but being able to apply it now to my airmen in an operational scene, it has helped me understand the mission at hand better. If you take a 1206, for example, a quarterly award, and you're helping an airman write out their accomplishments for the quarter. I'm taking time out of my day to promote this airman and potentially advance his career. I get to see exactly what he's doing and potentially impact his career later on in life. Maybe it's a promotion, maybe it's an OTS commissioning package. That just means so much to me to have the opportunity to really influence people. And I'm so grateful for that. So what I would impart on the audience is to see outside of yourself, scope out, look at the fisheye lens, see things through the fisheye lens, and look at what you can do for other people. Yes, take care of yourself, accomplish that, but what can you do for others? And I guarantee you'll see the reward and the benefit like you've never seen before.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for being here. And as we continue on with our talking points under the value-based leadership integration, having our NCO, senior NCO, and our company grade officer tiers represented. So again, thank you for being here. And one of the things when we talk about having a ready force is immediately comes to my mind is discipline. Discipline and responsiveness, right? Not only discipline in the things we need to have discipline in, but, you know, sometimes I wonder, and maybe it's just, you know, a fallacy on my part where I don't know that we're as responsive, whether that be in a simple tactical task, an email, a strategic requirement from our echelons that you lead in. I'd like for us to just explore that a little bit. A couple of things that come to mind that I would like to hear you talk about is how do you lead with facts when tensions rise? Because we see a little bit of that, and I think that falls in the discipline category. Mm-hmm. And then how do you hold yourself and others accountable to not only being disciplined, but also that responsive piece? And then feel free to explore within that those talking points anywhere that you feel that's something we'd like to talk to the formation about.
Well, hello, my name is Staff Sergeant Ian Stembridge. I'm the NCOIC of Readiness at the Maxwell Air Force Base Chapel.
Good afternoon, I am Chief Master Sergeant Eric Adams, and I am the Senior Enlisted Leader at the 42nd Security Forces Squadron.
Hello, I'm Technical Sergeant Mendez Chavez. I'm the Bioenvironmental Engineering Flight Chief.
Hey, I'm Captain Melvin. I've been in the Air Force for 7 years, and I am the Flight Commander of Resource Management and Medical Information Systems of the 42nd Healthcare Operations Squadron.
And Senior Master Sergeant Evansberger, I'm the SEL of Public Affairs, and I've been in the Air Force for 19 years.
So leading with facts when tensions rise, I know for me personally, it can be pretty difficult because I'm a very empathetic person. I'm very emotional. I know most human beings are emotional creatures, but I definitely wear my emotions on my sleeve. So when tensions rise, thankfully I haven't experienced a whole lot of that since I've been here at this base, but even in the past and in other settings, when tensions rise, I have tended to be more emotional in my responses. However, I've learned a lot of lessons through that in really I have to step back and pause and I have to analyze really what I'm thinking and I'm feeling, my thoughts, feelings, and emotions, what the situation is about, and what it really means in the grand scheme of things. Also thinking about the person that I'm talking about, who I'm talking about, my relationship with that person, how much I care about that person. Because at the end of the day, when tensions arise, I try to look at it from a perspective of I care about this person, I care about the conversation, or maybe I don't care about the conversation, but I care about this person. So I'm gonna step back, try to analyze what I'm thinking about and approach this as calmly as I can, because it's really easy to react with emotion, because that's, I mean, for many of us, it's a knee-jerk reaction just to like react with emotion. So training myself to respond with facts versus reacting with emotion. I do my best, you know, it's kind of hard to. I could sit here and tell you that I do that every single time and I don't. But just really stepping back and analyzing what I'm thinking so I can reapproach from a place of, I don't know, good standing.
For me, it's really, it comes down to you have to be the calm in chaos. And so as a leader, you got to step back, you got to gather the facts, look at the situation as a whole. Don't be too quick to make a reaction because you may be wrong on your first initial gut instinct. Unfortunately, I've been a part of a lot of different operations. I've worked with Army Special Operations before. I've seen chaos firsthand. And things may appear one way in the beginning. You may start to get a little bit of intel here. You may see something on an ISR here. But once you start getting more data as it comes along, you're gonna start to, it'll change your calculus. And so if you're too quick to react, sometimes you're gonna overreact or you're not gonna react in the right direction. So it's really just be that calm in chaos, take a step back. And also when you're experiencing these situations, like go in it as a team. So you're not just the leader, you're not just the one airman navigating this adventure by yourself, right? Bring along your wingman, share information, share information with the person next to you, the other agencies across the base, seek out that information. And then once you get a clear understanding of the situation, right, with all the facts involved, then you start to make decisions. Sometimes this takes a little while to get the facts. Other times it's quick. You're getting information from multiple different sources, and you're leading and you're deciding based off of all of the collected data. So, and the biggest thing too is to remove the emotion from it. So remember, at the end of the day, you know, you're given the responsibility of wearing the uniform, wearing the rank, being in a position of leadership or a followership, and ultimately going towards what right looks like. And a lot more times than not, your commander, your other leaders will help you shape what right is. And so,
yeah, that's great. I was going to touch on that accountability piece, right? So accountability really is key. And so just throughout my life and what I try to instill in my airmen and those that I work with is taking accountability. And so a lot of times we're very quick to point the finger and, you know, it's this person's fault or this situation happened and it's not my issue. But typically you can always find at least 1% somewhere in there where you need to take accountability for something that you did, right? And so with my team, that's something that we try to do is whatever the situation or task that we're doing, if issues arise, taking a step back and seeing what can we take accountability for, and then how can we address those things, move out, fix them, correct them, and then end up with a mission success. So I think really that accountability piece is key, and it's something that recently in time we've kind of backed away from and have been more quick to point the finger. So just kind of bringing that culture back, I think, is key.
Yeah, so I think when we talk about the discipline is silent integrity. But when you talk about the responsiveness, just based off of our profession of arms, just based off of our positions, our responsibilities, sometimes we feel as though that we have to be first. We have to get it right the first time. We have to absorb a lot of information, and with that information, be able to make a decision, because we don't want our commanders to be able or have to make that decision, because we're talking about mission command and commander's intent. But with that, that is where I have relied on my teammates, asking those critical questions, the questions that sometimes I don't really want to know. I just want to get to yes. But asking those critical questions, receiving that feedback, having an open dialogue, removes the emotional decision from any type of conversation. That way, every action that is happening, it is a factual action based off of facts, based off of metrics, based off of something that has happened in the past where we can actually accomplish the mission.
Yes, sir. It just goes back to kind of knowing your people, understanding the situation. And, you know, I like to work backwards, knowing what the end goal is, and just kind of going from there, empathizing with the personnel. And again, that situation, just working from it from there, chipping at it.
Yeah, so I'm gonna ad lib here a little bit. I'm gonna throw a little bit of a kink into this, just because hearing you, all of you provide your perspective is refreshing, but it makes me think of some other things. So, you know, when you talk about, I think, Ian, you brought it out the best, Sergeant Stembridge, you brought it out of like, hey, I'm thinking about this person. That's a good example of like, hey, I value this rapport, this relationship, I value this human, which kind of keeps you, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but kind of keeps you in check in those situations where emotion wants to kind of take over. And so you're like, hey, I need to find the facts because I appreciate this person. But for, are there other examples that you may have that's like, because I'm sitting here and I'm thinking like, hey, I'm listening to this. That's cool. Yeah, I agree with you. But like some tangible things, kind of like Sergeant Stembridge talked about, that you can latch on to, no matter what your rank is, no matter what your echelon is, or what your formation looks like, what I mean by that is like the size of your formation, some tangible things that Staff Sergeant Vaden listening to you. But yeah, that's right, Chief. But how do I respond? Like, give me something I can do with myself to help me in that situation.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, there's three sides to every story. So you may have, you know, some airmen that may have an issue or a rift. I think it, from a good leadership perspective, it's important to listen to concerns from one individual, listen to concerns from another, and then get maybe some unbiased outsider information. And so that's where I think we can take it down to the tactical level. There may be a concern or an issue that we're trying to resolve, and just getting all sides of the story before you're quick to with emotion to make a decision. So it could be, you could make the wrong decision if you act too quickly. So
it's also understanding our own experiences and some of our biases. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when we hear or we're communicating with other people, we often take their experience and we relate their experience to our experience. And then we think about how we reacted to that experience, trying to solve the problem or the issue or the task without actually understanding that times have changed and people react differently based off of emotion. The emotion that I have when I may be frustrated, it may be completely differently when somebody else is frustrated and the emotions that they may have. Also think that we should never downplay someone's emotions. I think that we should probably try to figure out what is that foundation, the cause of the emotion, but also find a way forward to address that task.
Absolutely. And like we had discussed earlier, having those relationships prior. So I know me personally, and I know a lot of people can empathize with this, but I'm very like conflict adverse, right? Like I don't want to make anybody angry or have those awkward situations. So kind of my coping mechanism with that is building relationships with multiple people, right? Because typically when you have those encounters, they're with those folks that you deal with often. And so if you build some kind of foundation, it just makes those conversations flow a lot easier where you can communicate. And then going back to the accountability piece, figure out like what's going on, how can we fix this, how can we adjust, and then move on from there.
I feel like just getting to know your people, just understanding that there are people too, mm-hmm. they have lives outside of all of this, right? It helps renormalize everything. We all suffer from a shortage of manning people and money. Just renormalizing and understanding that everybody's a person behind the uniform to help figure that piece out.
I don't think all emotion is bad emotion. I don't necessarily think there's bad or good emotion in a sense. I definitely think that there's been a while that emotional intelligence has kind of lacked in a lot of echelons, and it's been coming back. And I think there's been this drive for emotional intelligence in different leadership tiers. And it's been really encouraging to see, because I've experienced lack of emotional intelligence in leadership. I've experienced it. And it really shook me to my core. And when I moved on from that experience and found myself in a healthy environment where there were emotionally intelligent leaders who cared about me as an individual, it shaped my perspective of the Air Force. Because prior to that, I was ready to just get up on out of here. I was fed up with it. And I think that whole aspect of just caring about people, mm-hmm. especially just it speaks to the priorities of our commander here at Maxwell, taking care of people. I know I have the opportunity to really invest in that because, the chaplain corps is all about that. But I think every career field at the end of the day, our job is to take care of people in, some way or some regard. So when it comes down to it, being able to speak to the emotions of others is kind of what makes us such a strong fighting force, because understanding the people that we work with and how we can utilize their strengths to make us a stronger fighting force, I think is just what separates us from us and our adversaries.
I want to talk to us or hear you talk about risk to force, risk to mission. But before we do that, because this is such a great conversation, Captain, you brought up a point about the transparency and vulnerability about like, hey, this is me. And I would say that you represent a large portion of the United States Air Force supervisory individuals. So people, whether it's an NCO, senior NCO, CGO, FGO, whoever, there's a lot of humans want to avoid conflict, mm-hmm. right? But also what I heard each one of y'all saying is like the responsibility, from all of our positions we hold, we have a responsibility to our nation's sons and daughters to tell them the right thing at the right time in the right way. You highlight taking care of people. 100%, knowing your people and taking care of people. I often use the phrase, we're not the Cobham Corporation, we're a profession of arms, and we're here to do the things which our nation asks us to do.
Resolve with just good communication. You know, sometimes it's face-to-face communication. Sometimes it's, you know, I'm gonna send you an email or call you on a phone. Now, how often do we call each other on phones anymore? Probably never. It's text messaging. Sometimes that works. It's just knowing the person and knowing how to communicate, and also looking for opportunities to get out and to communicate. And it's not always work stuff. It's, you know, hey, what'd you do this weekend? Or, you know, what are your plans? What are your hobbies? Or it's, you know, you're on a ruck march and you're just talking, you know, it's stuff like that. You know, just open the communication, make avenues for feedback, and a lot of your issues will probably go away.
Yeah, my experience with feedback is kind of interesting. So I'm prior enlisted, so I've had feedback from a staff sergeant all the way up to a lieutenant colonel now. And so kind of seeing just different ways that feedback has been provided has kind of guided me to where I am now. And so the biggest thing that I've found is, in order to have good feedback, you gotta have standards, right? Without standards, how can you provide that feedback? And so, you know, we have the ALQ that we can use for the standards. And then what are my standards? What do I wanna see from you as an airman in providing that feedback? Because for the most part, I know when I was an airman and the airmen now, they want that feedback and they desire that feedback. And even now as a captain, I desire that feedback. So providing that to them early and often, because a lot of times you'll see it, and I'm sure the audience and even us sitting here, we've had those instances where you come up to your EPB or your OPB and you're like, well, I don't even know like how I did or what could I have improved on, and it's been a whole year, right? So really just focusing in on that and using those standards to provide the feedback will mean a lot, not just to me, but the airmen underneath us.
I feel like it starts from the bottom up, right? Is empowering your airmen to be able to speak up. I like to figure things out, not by myself, but with my airmen, right? That goes with the standards, understanding why the standards are there, going through the standards with them, and ensuring that they understand the why. That's my biggest thing, is understanding the why behind all of the standards and, you know, the thought process that we have.
I think feedback is extremely important, but prior to feedback, there's the connection. Because the type of feedback that you receive, that I receive, that anybody receives in any organization, it's based off of the connection between the person who is giving the feedback and the person who is receiving the feedback. What we have to do is get away from only giving feedback when it's time for awards and it's time for EPBs, OPBs. Mm-hmm. We start talking about assignments, because at that point in time, we're just checking a box. The only time you really care about me is when it's time for me to kind of like make a move. But having that connection, I think our airmen, I think our CGOs, FGOs, they need to know that everybody's human. Everybody, there's expectations for everybody, but the one expectation that we don't typically talk about is the responsibility or the expectation for connection. Mm-hmm. We should be able to talk to the lowest ranking airman, but then also be able to go to our commanders, our wing commander, our command chief, wherever it may be, and just have a conversation, because that is what builds that connection. That connection leads to trust. That trust leads to transparency, but then that also leads to accomplishing the mission. That also leads to taking care of someone when they don't even know that they need to be taken care of because they're going through something. Mm-hmm.
Chief, that is so well said. To quote one of my favorite authors, Dale Carnegie, become genuinely interested in people. So for me, it's really just caring about the person that I'm talking to, because you can give feedback based off of the Air Force guidelines. We also have to look at the opportunities that the Air Force provides us. There are so many opportunities, so many doors, so many different things that we can do in the Air Force. And understanding the individuals above, below, and lateral to you, understanding their goals or their aspirations, it can help you tier how you're going to provide them feedback. Because if you're going to say, I expect you to do this, and that individual had different plans, if it's an educational goal, if you will, you know, that feedback is not going to mean as much to them if they had a completely different goal. So understanding your people and what they're they're passionate about and being able to tie it into things that they care about, it'll really help you speak to them and then in turn understand them, and then they'll understand that you really care about them, and it just continues this cycle of genuine care. So really just genuinely caring about people.
That's amazing, and hopefully people actually listen to that, interpret what it means to them, and execute with that. Because there is, you know, I was sitting at an ALS, having a conversation with ALS, this quite a few months ago now, and they were like, what's one thing that that you talked about in ALS? And they were talking about feedback. It's like the exact same thing you're talking about. So I think it's a human endeavor. It goes back a little to your point earlier, Captain, about sometimes people, maybe a lot of times, people kind of try to avoid it, don't want to hurt feelings, don't necessarily know, don't know where they fall in line with their own with standards themselves. So who am I to call out somebody else, call out, right, versus having a conversation. So thank you for that. Definitely beneficial. That might be one of the major things that people should and could take away from the conversation, is about how to just care about people and provide feedback that helps them in the growth to either meet standards or better their career. Shifting gears on us quite significantly, I guess it is still tied, but shifting gears back to operational and mission. It does involve emotion. A lot of times in my experience, it involves emotion, as y'all discussed earlier, about how to see the facts, pause, analyze, and respond versus react. But when we talk about risk to force and risk to mission, as the Air Force continues to have us prepare for mission over function, what do we need to be prepared for? Right now, we still have our functional chains or our functional, you know, communities, but the Air Force is saying, hey, we need to be more ready for mission, whatever that mission is. So when we have a requirement or a task, it is agnostic to the echelon which it comes from. What I find a lot of times is there's an immediate no. I say, if I need Airman Stembridge, I need Staff Sergeant Stembridge for an operation. I'm not saying this happen specifically for with him, using it as an example. It's met with a lot of resistance, no, right up front. Because that functional community, that functional requirement says, hey, we need Staff Sergeant Stembridge. So using that as a backdrop, how is it that you would talk to the formation or help them understand, how do you separate emotion? We've talked about that, but like assess risk to force or risk to mission, because there are times where it affects an airman, and there are a lot of times where it affects a mission or a perceived mission. So I'd like to have a conversation on that, of like, when you get the request or the requirement to provide X amount of airmen, instead of saying no, what is the response that we should have, and how should we look at that and break that down?
I would say when you get requests like that, you should take a step back and see if the request is right for the person too. Because there's going to be multiple times throughout your career or throughout your time in services that you'll be presented with these, I call them opportunities for airmen to get outside the fence line, to go see something different, to go do something different, because it might open up their perspective. Especially when you get into a leadership position, you're not going to be solely focused on your technical expertise as you grow higher in the ranks. There's going to be more and more that's asked of you, and things change. For my own career, I'm on my fifth AFSC. So I came in as an aircrew life support. We merged, became aircrew flight equipment. I retrained into as a photographer. We merged with public affairs, became photojournalists, and now we've merged again with broadcasters. And so throughout my entire career, there's like every few years, there's always change. And so I could have gave up a long time ago and said, no, I don't want to retrain. I'm just going to get out, or just go with the change. And every time it's always been, you've learned something new. You became a better person, a better airman. I will tell you, like growing up through high school, like English was not my go-to. I wasn't a writer. I'd watch movies and stuff like that. But now, like, as I've retrained into public affairs, I became a better communicator, went to school, got a bachelor's degree in public relations and communications. And as a young high school kid, I would have never dreamed that was even possible. I was a mechanical person. I like to work on things. I like to take things apart. But you know, as I grew, I found different ways to develop myself and just become a better, well-rounded person. So seek the opportunities, accept the opportunities, look for opportunities for your airmen. It's not always what you're doing today. It's what they could be doing tomorrow that could change the future for them and their careers.
We're kind of going through something just like that in my flight. And it goes back to getting to know the person behind the tasker, right? Right now, there's a lot of issues with what's going on within that tasker to deploy. And it's us just figuring out how we can get to yes, right? It's understanding how this impacts the flight, the mission as a whole, and even the 30,000 foot view. So just understanding everything behind it is paramount to making sure that we all fit the puzzle piece where it needs to be.
Yeah, talking medical, so being both medical, right, we really have two mission sets, right? We have the delivery of the peacetime healthcare, so that's here at home, and then we also have that mission to go over and take care of the nation's business, right? And so how do you balance those things? And so really what it boils down to, just like he said here, is trying to run through all the scenarios and try to find an answer to yes, because ultimately that's what we signed up for, and that's what we're meant to do, is when we're called to go and take care of the nation's business. So it's definitely a balancing act, and it does cause a lot of those tensions, and you got to go back to the facts like we talked about and have those relationships. But again, perfect example, because that's exactly what we deal with on a constant basis, especially in medical, with losing providers and et cetera. So definitely something you have to balance and try to find a way to yes.
Yeah, I think you have to. You have to be willing to serve how you've been asked to serve. Everybody is serving in their own capacity. However, there's always the opportunity to serve in a different capacity. Sometimes when I get a request, the immediate answer is not no. It's how can we get to yes? Because I already know that whenever I bring up this conversation or a topic, I already know that the resistance is going to say no. So I gather the facts. I try to figure out why people, or why the automatic response is no, but then what is the overall mission? How does not participating or saying yes actually hurt the mission of the organization? Whereas when not saying yes will hurt the mission of the installation, will hurt the mission of another organization. I mean, security forces, we're as low man as everybody else. However, we do have a huge enlisted force. There's going to be opportunities across the Air Force, across the wing, here at Maxwell and Gunter, where those airmen deserve that opportunity. They deserve the opportunity to grow. They deserve the opportunity to be developed by somebody else that's not within the career field, because when they come back to the career field, they're going to be a better leader. I think we get short vision on the immediate success versus having the opportunity and then returning it back to the Air Force. We've become, hey, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. But we're not willing to give back to the Air Force, which means we're not willing to give back to our airmen, which means we're not willing to give back to our CGOs. We're not willing to give back to our civilian employees, because we want what we want, but we're not willing to serve how we should be serving in those capacities.
Absolutely. The way that I look at it is kind of leading by example, and putting yourself outside of the comfort zone. So what this looks like for me, I have the privilege of being a part of the readiness religious support team for the chapel. And a lot of that looks like is preparing, you know, the chaplain corps personnel for dealing in a contingent environment. And are we ready? Are we ready to respond? Are we ready to deal with the dead and the dying? And I had to take a step back and actually, you know, analyze that question and analyze it with my staff and my partners. And the answer was no, we're not ready. I know for myself, you know, I haven't seen a lot of things. There are a lot of things I haven't seen and experienced. So how am I going to respond and react when I'm responding to something that's, you know, heinous or terrible? So one of the things that we did is we set up a relationship with the county medical examiner's office, and we went there and we watched, you know, a full spectrum of things, and that really set the precedence for what, you know, I could experience in a contingent environment. So really, I didn't want to do that, but I knew that putting myself outside of that comfort zone to experience that would ultimately make me better, so that I'm not reacting and I'm responding. So finding these opportunities and going after them first, setting the precedence so you can tell your team, hey, I went through this, it's gonna suck, but, you know, let's go after it together. I'm gonna be there right with you the whole time, and we're gonna experience this together. It's going to make us better at the end of the day. So there is that aspect of emotion that we need to look at. But also at the end of the day, any one of us can get called, and we swore that we would be a part of this institution, that we would defend and protect and defend the Constitution. And that can look like a lot of different things. So being ready to respond to that effectively, I think, is really important for the sights and the smells and, you know, all those things.
That's really, really great. A couple of you touched on something that I really wanted to explore just a little bit more. Part of it we can edit out. Like, everybody don't feel like everybody has to answer. So if you're comfortable with what I'm about to ask, to be able to provide some insight, because where I think that we struggle, so great answer. Where I think we really struggle is we think we own it. Like, so me as a dirt boy, right? As a dirt boy, like, hey, I'm gonna come take 4 of your 8 dirt boys. No, you can't do that because you won't be able to do this, this, and this. That's not even my job to say whether we should or shouldn't do that, right? What I would like to explore just a little bit more is great, great responses. The thing that I'd like to drill down on is people within the formation, leaders within the formation say, hey, I hear you, but I have a responsibility to get X, Y, and Z done. Whoever's would like to take this on of like explaining in a concise way of how do we provide COAs, courses of action, options for the decision makers, right? Because we're not all decision makers at our levels, depending on where you're at. So how, talk through that of, hey, there's a staff sergeant meeting out there. It's like, that's awesome. Now what? Like, I'm supposed to get all this stuff done. So over to whoever wants to jump on that grenade of how we help people walk through providing options.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I've learned over the past couple of months is decisions have to be made. The thing is, I'm not the person responsible for making the decision. I'm responsible for providing my commander with COAs, recommendations to make an informed decision. So some of the stuff that I do that I encourage our NCOs within my organization is ask questions. So yes, I'm a chief, but you know what? What I think is I should probably know what my peripheral manager knows. I should probably know what my chief at ATC knows. So that way I can have those deliberate conversations with people in my squadron. So when it's time for a decision, we're not talking about the decision. We're talking about COAs. How do we get to yes? When we talk about how do we get to yes, there's always the conversation of what are we gonna stop doing? Because as we provide recommendations, sometimes we get a tasker, we say, yep, we can do it. We can do it. We can do it. What our leaders expect from us is to also tell them, what are we gonna stop doing? Because it's not on the backs of our airmen or the organization. There's a lot of stuff that we want to do. But I'm a bad leader if I'm not communicating what are we going to stop doing. Because if I'm not communicating that, my airmen are saying, the chief doesn't care. Yeah. We're just going to get to yes. The chief isn't listening. The commander's not listening. Where we should be communicating the bigger picture.
I feel like as flight leaders, squadron leaders, we should kind of know what programs we own within those flights and those squadrons, and being able to tell, hey, this program, it might not go green, it might be yellow, it might be red, however that looks, but explaining that situation up, the communication needs to go up and down. Again, understanding from, you know, the lowest airman, from, you know, vehicle maintenance, doing, you know, vehicle checks every day, to, hey, I'm not going to be able to do it every day. I'm going to be doing it once a week now, or once a month kind of thing, whatever that looks like for us, like the RP, instead of doing, you know, full-time RP, hey, we're just going to do just-in-time training, that kind of thing. Just communicating that up, from going green to yellow to red, and understanding the why behind that. I think that's the biggest key right there, is that communication point for that.
Yeah, I'd say with the COAs too, it's an opportunity to identify the things that you won't be able to do anymore, but it's also a way to look at what you're doing and say, is this even worth it in the first place? Or is there a better way? Can we get more creative? Can we get more efficient? Is there an AI tool that can do this for us? You know, because this is the way we're evolving. This is the way our potential enemies are evolving, is the is the use of technology to improve the efficiency. You know, the old way of doing business, just because we've always done it that way, it may be dead and gone. And this may be the opportunity to just clean the slate. And this is a better idea on how we should move forward with it, and how we can be more leaner and more efficient and put the focus and the energy into stuff that actually matters versus the nice to haves.
Yeah, so prior to coming here, I had never been a part of a planning team like an OPT. There's so much value in an OPT. I understand that it's not popular because sometimes the processes that we have in our organization, we think that those are like our processes. You know, if somebody else comes in that's, you know, not a security forces member, not a defender, he or she is going to break our process. That's not necessarily the case. Sometimes we get tunnel vision because we say, hey, we've been doing this for 25 years, 30 years. Why does it need to change? Other organizations, other people need to change to meet our standard. But the overall question is, what we're doing right now, is it the standard or is it just something that we're comfortable and complacent with? Are we the people that are not open to change because it has to change our mindset? So I believe participating in OPTs, I think having other teammates come in to look at processes, that is extremely important. And by doing that, that will help identify multiple COAs, COAs that we haven't even thought about within our own community to help everybody else out.
That's awesome. I could spend probably the rest of the evening chatting with you all about a lot of different things, and maybe just this one topic we could go into detail on. I think it is somewhat, you talk about OPTs, Chief Adams. I didn't have a chance to sit on one of those until I was PACA from the Nindo Paycom. I didn't even know what the term was. You know, Sergeant Stenbridge, you were sharing something with us earlier. Like, I had to look this up. And that's 100% what I had to do. And I was like, man, there's a lot of value to this. Speaking of value, your judgment, experience, and training, your JET, if you will, is incredibly valuable to our formation. So I would like to start with you, Senior E, and just provide 30 seconds, minute, kind of like your parting thoughts, closing thoughts, if you will, to the audience, to the formation.
Sure. This is definitely a team sport. You know, it's your teammates next to you. It's your families at home. No one service member can operate this environment, this experience, you know, 20 years of service by themselves. It takes a community to raise an airman, in my opinion. You're giving your opinions, your advice to your folks, but also, you know, seek the opinions and the advice and the mentorship from others. And don't forget to take care of their families too. Get to know their families, get to know each other, find time to get together. Sometimes it's always about, you know, the 9 to 5, the work schedule. Build it into your schedule, build that group PT time in there. For me, it's a Tuesday, Thursday thing. So every Tuesday, Thursday at 15:30, we're getting together. We're going to go do some PT. Some days we're running the River Road. Some days we're playing volleyball at the gym. It's just an opportunity to get together, get to know each other, get the PT in at the same time, and just making it part of your daily or your weekly battle rhythm. So.
Perfect. Yeah, I would say two main things, right? Focus on taking care of yourself. And so when I say yourself, that means yourself and then also those around you, your family. That's number one. You have to take care of your home base and then take care of the people that you're around. So if we're looking for mission success, whether that's an operational mission or it could be a personal mission, the people around you will help you take care of that. So if you take care of those folks, and in the long run, it's gonna equal great success. And so just really focusing on that, I think will be great.
Yes, sir. And just, I believe setting the groundwork from the bottom up to be able to communicate all the way up and down effectively, and making sure that we're taking care of each other, you know, mentally and physically as well, just, you know, we're one big family, right? We all wear the same uniform at the end of the day. So I believe just, you know, reaching out to other flights and, you know, checking in on them and participating in all those things with them.
Yeah, connection is so important. One of the things that we don't do is connect, but there's always an opportunity to connect. So as I go out throughout my day and I'm looking at people, or I'm like attending meetings, I'm thinking about, I don't want to allow this moment or a moment to not connect with somebody, because that connection that we have, Even if we know it or we don't know it, it's helping somebody else out. It's giving somebody else strength. It's giving somebody else the ability to reach out and contact you even when you don't know what you want to talk about. So just understanding that that connection is extremely important, and that we appreciate you because everybody's doing a hard job every single day, but you're not doing it alone.
Really, the final thing that I'd say is just, I'm just going to voice it. Become genuinely interested in others. Become genuinely interested in your teammates, your subordinates, laterally, your peers. Become genuinely interested and be intentional about your relationships and about the things that you're doing. Not for reward, not for, you know, whatever. Just be intentional about the relationships that you're building, because we are a team. This is a team effort. But it's more than that. We're a family. We're a fighting force. We're gonna go out there together, and we're gonna do things together. And we need to have trust. And in order to build trust, you gotta know the person to your left, your right, above you, below you. You gotta know everybody. And just the best way to do that is just being interested in them, getting to know them, knowing their struggles, knowing their strengths, knowing their families, knowing their hobbies, you know, what have you. And then just be intentional about how you attack that.
Thank you all so much. I appreciate each and every one of you, and thank you for what you bring to this fight. Fighting shoulder to shoulder, getting after our nation's business is an honorable profession. So, and speaking of honor, I'm honored to be doing that with y'all. So appreciate y'all.
Cool.
Thank you.